To thank you for making Subway footlongs famous, now enjoy any regular footlong as a $5 footlong. That's right, any, including your favorites, like the savory chicken and bacon ranch. Any Subway regular footlong is just $5. Hurry in.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. We're going to talk a little TV today. One of our favorites, our favorite TV critics, Alan Sepulveda from the New York Star-Ledger and the blog What's Alan Watching. He's on the Subway Fresh Take hotline right now, and I hate him because he gets the Lost episodes ahead of me. What's happening?
I don't get the Lost episodes ahead of you, not anymore.
You don't?
You and I are the same at this point, Bill.
How many did you get initially ahead of me?
This season I got none. Last season I got like one or two, but I'm up at like 10 or 11 o'clock at night trying to piece this stuff together like everybody else.
Really? So you pour the pot of coffee and you just go?
Yep. Just stay up until, you know, 11:30, 12, 1, however long it takes, and hopefully it's coherent.
All right. Well, we're going to save Lost because I want to talk about the Oliphant show first, that all of a sudden I can't remember what the name is. Justified.
Justified. It was originally going to be Lawman, and then Steven Seagal did a reality show with that title, so they had to scotch it.
I kind of like Justified. I think it's a strong title. And plus,
yeah, it works.
I like when they work the title into the pilot, when the guy actually says it in the dialogue, and then it brings it full circle, which he did near the end. I'm not sure how I feel about this show. I want to get your take, but here's my take. I love him. He could be in anything, and I think I'd enjoy it. He could be a gas station attendant. He could be the assistant coach on a women's basketball team. Really, anything he does, I would enjoy. And I think this show kind of takes advantage of that, both to as a positive and a negative, because I wasn't totally crazy about the pilot. What did you think?
I like the pilot. I'm an Elmore Leonard fan. It's based on a character that Leonard wrote, and they used a lot of the dialogue. But, you know, I love Tim Oliphant. He does, like, three things, but he does them really well, and they're sort of taking advantage of all those at once. He's uptight. He looks good with a gun, looks good with a hat on his head.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying it.
So you think that his career has progressed properly? Because I feel like he should be bigger. And I don't know what happened with his career, but it's almost weird to me that he's doing TV over at least – he should have had some sort of movie franchise at this point, I feel like.
Well, the problem is he comes off as really angry. You know, he did, like, this bad romantic comedy with Jennifer Garner a few years ago, Catch and Release, and you watch it, and you're like, they're supposed to be falling in love, and you keep waiting for him to kill her.
I like it, though. I mean, it's a good tension.
It could be, but I'm just saying he's got limitations, and I think the TV stuff he's done, this in Deadwood, have worked around those limitations a little better.
So you're saying that he's a little too dark to really transcend other genres?
He could not. Certainly there's a lot of actors who are in the movies who only do one or two things, so maybe it's just a matter of him finding the right vehicle. But it hasn't happened yet.
Would you say that Sawyer from Lost has the same problem? Because I think he's a really good actor too, but it would be hard for me to imagine him in a romantic comedy with Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think at this point, the downfall of being on a hit show like Lost is, you know, for the next 10 years, he shows up in anything, it's going to be, hey, it's Sawyer.
Yeah, but I think he's better than that, though.
No,
I think he's
really
one of the
good.
Best actors in the show.
Yeah, he started off as someone I was sort of lukewarm about and has become really, really good over time. And him and the guy who plays Locke and the guy who played Banner, I'd say my three favorites at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Back to Justified. So I would describe this show, there's a little roadhouse in it. Like, guy goes back to the small town. It's got that element. Definitely has a little bit of, like, modern Deadwood. A tiny bit of, I guess, maybe the Tommy Lee Jones character from The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals. Just like a tip of that. What else would you compare it to?
Well, I mean, I think Roadhouse is kind of a good one. I'd say it's better than Roadhouse.
Obviously better.
Most of what was good about Roadhouse was not intentionally done.
Right.
I would say. But, you know, I like these sort of shows and movies where the hero basically tells you what he's going to do to you, and then he does it. You know,
yes.
I mean, it's sort of like a Dirty Harry quality almost.
Yeah. I thought the pilot was a little fat. It could have been about 10 minutes shorter for me. The going over the one-hour mark, I'm not sure they needed to do. It dragged in a couple spots for me.
Yeah, FX likes to let their pilots run to random times, you know, 11:07, 11:09. I'm not exactly sure why.
Now, have you seen multiple episodes or just the pilot?
I've seen four of them so far. I just got done watching, I think, the third a couple of minutes ago, actually.
And how invested should I be? Like, does it get better? Does it tail off? Is it same as the pilot? Where does it go?
About the same. I'd say the one that's on tonight isn't as good as the other three, but next week's is really good, and the one after that has the guy who played Cameron in Ferris Bueller, and that's very good.
Oh, Alan Ruck.
So, yeah, Alan Ruck.
I just saw
Alan
him
Ruck
in...
Alan Ruck is an ass-kicking dentist.
Really?
Yeah.
I just saw, I was watching, for some reason, Class was on one of the HD channels with Andrew McCarthy and Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
Really, really, really preposterous 80s movie that I enjoy. And Alan Ruck and John Cusack, two of the prep school friends. So I was thinking, so that movie came out in 1983. John Cusack also appeared in Say Anything, which I looked up, and it came out in 1989. I was wondering, is that the biggest span of a guy appearing in a high school movie, in high school movies? So 6 years, 6 years passed, and he was in another high school movie. That's got to be a record.
It may or may not be. You got to keep in mind, Ruck was about 30 when he did Ferris Bueller, so he may have been doing high school movies for a really long time.
Oh, so you think, yeah, so Ruck did Class in 1983 and then Bueller in 86. I'm going to look him up while we talk. So you think, back to Justified, so you think I should stick with it? That's your advice?
You know, if you like sort of shows about tough guys, I think it's a lot of fun. I've been enjoying it.
I do wonder if it's going to eventually just kind of wear out, you know?
It might. You know, it's sort of, there's only so many times he can say, all right, now I'm going to take out my gun and shoot you unless you do what I say.
Now, Alan Ruck, his career started in 1983. He was in Bad Boys with Sean Penn.
And Issa Morales. Never forget Issa Morales.
Strong year for him. He was in Bad Boys in Class. And then Ferris Bueller in 86. And then the wheels kind of came off after that. He was in Young Guns, too. He played Henry William French.
Yeah, I remember that.
If anyone listening can find a longer gap between high school movies where somebody was either the star or like one of the supporting stars than Cusack, I would love to know. So with Justified, yeah. See, I like the Aryan subplot. I've always enjoyed kind of dipping into the whole... That, you know, that whole world. I even watched Dead Bang with Don Johnson like 2 weeks ago, which was really the last movie that tried to attempt to dive into that. I guess you could say American History X, but do you feel like that's enough for a whole season of shows or no?
Well, that's not really what they're dealing with. That's just the bad guy in the first episode. You know, tonight he's chasing a guy who breaks out of prison.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's sort of like different cases every week. It's not really all that serialized.
All right. So you're lukewarm on Justified.
No, I think I like it better than you. I think Oliphant's really good, and I like sort of the writing, and it's sort of going to rise and fall on the guest stars every week.
I like Oliphant. I support anything he does, and I'm mad that his career hasn't been better. Let's move to Parenthood, which I've seen the first two, and it always should have been a TV show. It was one of those movies. I feel the same way about St. Elmo's Fire. I can't believe St. Elmo's Fire hasn't been converted into a TV show yet.
You know, Parenthood was a TV show.
What do you mean?
In like 1990, they did a real short-lived version with Ed Begley and Leonardo DiCaprio.
What?
Yep.
Why did I know that?
Playing the Joaquin Phoenix part.
Oh, my God.
So what? Like 11 episodes.
So Leo destroyed all the copies? He got rich and just burned them?
Quite possibly. I bet you if you Google, you could at least find photographic evidence.
Ed Begley Jr. I mean, that's you're dead coming out of the gate just right there. I don't know how that happens. So I've seen the first two. They've obviously spent a lot of money, as evidenced by the fact that they got the rights to a Bob Dylan song that is like incorporated not only in the pilot but in the theme song. That must have cost about $5 billion. And then the ensemble cast, I'm guessing, is expensive. Was this just NBC going all in because they needed a 10 o'clock show?
Well, I mean, you know, they were going to put it on at 9 before they got rid of Leno. So, I mean, it was in the works before then. And, you know, Maura Tierney was in it originally, and then she got cancer and had to drop out. But I think they've just been sort of pushing it for a while because they need something.
Was it better with Maura Tierney?
I thought it was It's weird because the more Tierney pilot, I thought it was kind of okay and she was great in it. She was the best thing. And then when they had to recast with Lauren Graham, they reshot a bunch and the rest of the show got much better. And I think Graham's fine too. Hmm. So I think they sort of took that opportunity to make it a little lighter. It was really dark the first time around.
And now not as dark.
No.
I'm looking at the 1990 Parenthood. You're right. Ed Begley Jr., the leader. The leader in IMDb. That's embarrassing. Thora Birch was in it. David Arquette, Leo DiCaprio, and former remote control host, and now the late Ken Ober.
Oh, yeah, Ken Ober. I'd forgotten. Yeah, Arquette played the Keanu part.
Yeah, that's a problem right there. Coming out of the gate. Has that ever happened before where they've made a TV show out of a movie and then waited 15, 20 years and then just said, screw it, let's try it again? I'm trying to think.
Well, I mean, you know, there have been like six versions of The Odd Couple. They did a Odd Couple at one point.
That's true. Yeah, with the Barney Miller guy was in that.
Yep, and the son from Sanford and Son.
We might be due for another Odd Couple.
Every generation gets the Odd Couple it deserves.
You know what I'm ready for? I'm ready for Different Strokes again.
You think that plays today?
Yeah, why not? Why wouldn't it play? I'll throw that at you.
Because it was kind of like socially awkward even in the late 70s.
It's true.
30 years later, it would seem even weirder.
The rich white guy as the savior of the African-American community, basically. I guess yeah. That is a little offensive. It didn't seem offensive at the time, but I guess it was 1976.
Didn't seem offensive at the time.
It's true.
It seemed offensive at the time.
I'm ready for good times to come back, too.
Well, Jimmy Walker, I'm sure, is available if you want to call him.
I think that there is some cachet in going backwards with shows that either worked once upon the time or didn't work as well. But like we saw it with 90210, that show's unwatchable. And they're renewing it for a third year. And it's basically just because of the title. So I do feel like, you know, if they're looking for ideas, and granted, I'd much rather see them come up with new ideas. Like, for instance, I thought The Good Wife was a really good idea for a show. And it's not one of those shows I go out of my way to watch, but if it's on and I end up watching it, I always enjoy it. And I like Margulies. But still, there's stuff that from the past that we could bring back.
Well,
like Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club could definitely work as a show. But I think what you want to do with a remake is you want to find something that had a good idea but didn't really work the first time. And then you can do it right the second time. I mean, I know you weren't a Battlestar Galactica fan, but that's basically what they did. They took a show that was lame but had a cool idea underneath it and said, all right, let's take this seriously and we'll do it.
So Manimal, maybe, is a candidate.
You really think Manimal was a good idea?
It was a terrible idea. But under your hypothesis, that's a show that didn't work that they could bring back. Maybe give it another whirl. Maybe the world's ready for Manimal in 2011. We have better technology now.
It was CGI Manimal.
The BJ and the Bear. Maybe we have better chimp technology. So Parenthood, scale of 1 to 10, what's your grade?
I'd say maybe a 6 or 7. It's one of those shows where I think I like the people in it more than, at this point, I like what they're doing. Mm. I think some of the stories work, some of them don't. The one with Peter Krause and his kid, who has Asperger's, I think is pretty good. And I like Dax Shepard, who I've never liked in anything. I like him in this. But it's sort of, they're bouncing around from story to story, so if you don't like one of them, you're kind of stuck with it for a while.
I didn't like the Lauren Graham, the daughter. That was a role that I thought could have been better. She's kind of a nothing part. Yeah, we get it. You're mean and you hate mom. Like, that was kind of a cliched part. I agree with you on Dax Shepard. Not terrible. Who knew?
Yeah,
From Punk'd.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, Craig T. Nelson is the dad.
And married to John McClane's wife from Die Hard.
Who had a nothing role in the pilot. I think she had like two lines. And I didn't recognize her for the first half hour. Where do you stand on Craig T. Nelson? I'm all the right moves in Coach every time I see him. I just can't get out of it.
See, and that's the problem that Josh Holloway is going to have whenever Lost ends. He's going to be Sawyer. It's just, you know, you do something and you do it well. It doesn't matter how good an actor you are. People see you as that one part.
Top three favorite shows, new ones, of the 2009-2010 season.
Well, we're in a good stretch right now. I mean, if we're counting The Pacific as like a show and not a miniseries, that would be definitely number one.
It's a miniseries. I hate when they do that. How is it not a miniseries?
Well, no, but I'm saying it's a show. It's something that's on that is my favorite thing to watch right now.
But I'm saying when they go for the Emmy, they're going to pretend that's like a drama.
Fine. No, they'll submit it as a miniseries. Band of Brothers was a miniseries.
Okay, good.
All right, so you don't have to be agitated about that.
So Pacific, you're saying I should go and watch the first two?
Yeah, especially if you can sort of watch them together. It's sort of like The Wire in that respect. Like, you need a little time to immerse yourself in it. But it's,
really? See, I'm kind of over World War II. 70 years ago.
Over World War II.
I'm over it. We've seen all the movies and TV shows we need to see about World War II. I can't think of anything that's going to happen in any TV show that hasn't been something, a variation of something I've already seen.
I would argue that this isn't the case in this.
Really?
Because the Pacific Theater is really a lot different from, you know, all the stuff we've seen for the most part is in Europe, Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, things like that, you know, Kelly's Heroes. This is much more brutal. It's savage. It's really intense. It'll sort of work you like a speed bag.
Oh. All right, I'll watch.
Okay.
Good. I'll watch. So number two. So you got Pacific One. Give me two more.
All right. Let's see. Well, this hasn't debuted yet, but Tremé, which is the new one from The Wire guys, is coming up on HBO in a few weeks. I've only seen the pilot so far, but you know, if it's from The Wire guys, I'm all in on that for a while.
Hearing some buzz that just they're already like trying to manage our expectations with, hey, if you love The Wire, you know that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to like this show. It's a lot different.
Well, here's the thing. You know, The Wire, it was sort of like it was tricking you into eating your broccoli. It would sort of mingle it with the spaghetti because it had all the social commentary, but there was still this really good cops versus criminals story every season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no spaghetti with Tremé. It's, you know, it's more of a family drama. There's no crime element or anything like that. But it's got Bunk and Lester from The Wire, a lot of the same producers. John Goodman, who's very funny in it. Steve Zahn, a bunch of other people, and the music's great. Again, I've only seen a 90-minute pilot, but I really loved it.
And how many are they going to do?
It's either 10 or 12 this first season. I'm thinking 10 because that seems to be what HBO does these days.
Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night. When How to Make It in America ends, that'll come on, I think, on the 11th.
All right, save that because we're going to get into it with that show. What's your third?
In terms of new, probably would be Justified. Right now, I mean, there's not a ton of new stuff on, but it's sort of a good spring right now for returning things. You know, Lost is on, Breaking Bad is on, Chuck is on, Parks and Rec, a bunch of other shows that I really like are going on. Party Down comes on in late April. So there's a lot of good TV either right now or coming up in the next few weeks. It's a very busy time for me.
I like Party Down.
That's a very funny show.
Yeah, it's definitely hit or miss, but when it hits, it's really good.
Yeah, they did one episode last season where they're catering the after party for an adult film award show.
Classic. A must watch. I insist that everybody watches that one. It's my favorite one out of all of them.
Yeah, and if you have Netflix, they stream all of them. So even if you don't have Stars, you can see them that way.
That was a great one. You mentioned Breaking Bad, which I have the DVDs now. Okay. Randomly in the mail, the AMC people just mailed me the DVDs. Which I didn't ask
for.
You will
not stop until all of us have convinced you to watch it, Bill.
Apparently, America is gathering behind this movement. After the tournament, I'm gonna plow through them.
Okay. I'm just warning you now. It takes a little while to get its footing because they didn't really know exactly what they were doing in the first year, and then it got cut off by the writer's strike. But by the time you get to the second season, it's really just badass.
All right. Anything else? Oh, Parks and Rec. People are in on that show. Had a bad first year, and then now everybody loves it.
Yeah, that's a sort of a classic example of like a show that didn't know what it was doing, took the summer off, and figured it out, and has been really, really funny this year.
And people had faith they were going to figure it out because there was a lot of smart people working on that show. And eventually, and they had good actors too. So eventually that's going to work. I am not watching it. I'm not a network sitcom guy. But I feel like if I had to watch two, I'd probably watch that one and 30 Rock.
Okay. I would say actually Parks and Rec and Community have been the two best of the NBC Thursday shows this year. 30 Rock has been kind of off, although the last couple have been good. But, you know, in years past, it's definitely been one of the best.
Really? I've heard split emotions on Community, so you're a fan.
Yeah, some people hate it, and there's this weird thing because Modern Family also debuted this year, and it's like people decided that you're only allowed to love one and not the other. And therefore, if you like Modern Family, you got a bag on Community. It's like this bizarre feud that came out of nowhere, and I've been dealing with all year.
It's a really random reason for a feud. I'm in on Modern Family. I'm gonna, as soon as the season ends, this summer I'm gonna plow through that, because I haven't heard one person say that they didn't like it and that it's not an easy 30 minutes or 25, I guess, without commercials.
More like 21.
21. I met the guy Ty.
Ty Burrell, yeah.
I met him at some random party, and he was like one of the coolest celebrities I've ever met. I'm not even kidding. And I was like, and he was exactly like I guess he is apparently on the show. And it made me want to root for the show. This is why I hate meeting celebrities or athletes, because it completely affects the way you're supposed to objectively think. Do you have that trouble when you're doing some TV reviews?
Sometimes, yeah. Like if an actor is a jerk or a producer is a jerk, or conversely, if I really like them but I don't necessarily like the show they're doing, it becomes kind of hard for me to, because I'm like, well, they're going to be reading this, and I'm going to feel bad. So I always have to sort of fight that as much as I can.
It's going to be so awkward when I write a show. You're not going to know what to do. You're going to be like, if you hate it, you're going to be like, you know what? I have to abstain from this. I'm too close to it. I won't be objective, but deep down you'll hate it.
I've been on the podcast several times now. I have to recuse myself.
All right. Let's get into it on How to Make It in America.
Okay.
Here's my case for the show and why I like it. And it's weird because some people are just down on it. First of all, it's a very easy 30 minutes. Very easy. It reminds me of Entourage Season 1, where it just kind of goes and I enjoy it. And, you know, I'm not laughing out loud, but I'm entertained. I like all the characters. I like rooting for the guys. It's kind of set up what Entourage did in Season 1, where these people working on their way up, like trying to get somewhere. And you just become invested in what they're doing. I also really like the lead guy, Brian Greenberg. I think he's a good actor. The other guy I'm not as crazy about. And I think the show's gotten better. Like, I thought the birthday party episode, which I think was the fourth one, I thought it was just a really good episode. And now, the plot's headed somewhere. More importantly, though, the show's got a real style to it. I like how it's done. I love the theme song. I like how they use New York. It's like, it's kind of the New York that I'm more familiar with, not the kind of glamorous Sex in the City New York, but kind of like the grungy side of New York and the kind of people you meet there, weird parties and stuff. And I don't know. I just feel like it captures that vibe. And then on top of that, I like how they do the photos. I think the snapshot photos to kind of move the thing along, I think, is pretty clever. Overall, thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I love the theme song and the opening credits. It's the best one that HBO's had on any of their shows in a while. I think the style of it, the sense of atmosphere they give of New York is really good. And it is a very easy watch, and I've watched all the episodes and sort of had a good time doing it. But, you know, it's like you say, there's not a lot of laughs in there. You got on my case back in the summer about Hung, because you're like, it's saying it's a comedy, but it's not funny. And How to Make It in America isn't even really necessarily trying to be a comedy. And I don't like Greenberg as much as you do.
Really?
The show sort of works in spite of him.
Oh, so he's almost the Adrian Grenier corollary.
Yeah. I think he's just kind of bland. And I'm not saying I necessarily love the other guy, but I think that kind of character is a more interesting one. But, I mean, I like the sense of hustle and the atmosphere and the idea that they are sort of starting from the bottom and working their way up. That's a lot more fun than what Entourage is at this point.
I also like, I thought that it was an awesome scene when they were trying to get into the club and they, you know, they were in it with the bouncer in the fourth episode and, oh, you can't get in. And the guy's like just crushed and it turned out it was a joke. Like, those are little nuances that I think Entourage kind of got away from. And if you watch the, you know, they on HBO Comedy, and now I think Spike's rerunning the first season of Entourage, it was a much more nuanced show at that point. I think it's become a lot more like blown out and slapsticky, and here are your three plots, and this is going to be crazy. And season one wasn't like that, in my opinion.
Yeah. My only concern about How to Make It is, because it's from some of the same people who do Entourage, is what killed Entourage ultimately was everything started to come too easily to the characters. There was never any conflict. It's like, no matter how bad things get, it works out by the end of the episode. And we're starting to see a little of that in How to Make It. Like the latest episode, he randomly hooks up with a girl who can get him the T-shirts he needs. Mm. That sort of thing.
And she was pretty. They've done a nice job. Although I'm still not crazy about the female lead. I think Shannon Sossaman, who I've always liked, who's like a bit character on this show, I kind of wish she'd been the lead. But hey, listen, my whole thing is, if you're keeping my interest for 30 minutes and I'm disappointed when your show's over, you're doing something right. And I do get disappointed when the show's over. So maybe, I don't know, maybe my standards have dropped.
No, I don't hate the show, Bill.
You kind of, I don't know, you're down on it.
I don't love it, that's all. It's an entertaining, it's sort of a pleasant way to spend a half an hour, especially sort of as a come down from, you know, I'll have just watched The Pacific where stuff is blowing up and people are losing limbs and things. And, all right, now we'll go hang and we'll party in New York for a half hour.
Listen, you like dark shows. What can I tell you? You like seeing
sometimes
people blown up, crystal meth, you're a dark guy. Justified,
yeah,
people getting killed.
Sometimes I'm dark. Sometimes
maybe
I go to that place.
Maybe light's not your thing. So you are a hung fan.
I watch shows like Chuck that are just completely goofy, so I'm not entirely dark.
You are a hung fan?
I kind of liked it more at the beginning, and then I faded on that as it went. So we'll see how that goes when that comes back in a few months.
I just didn't think there was enough there to keep me watching every week. That was my thing.
TV is doing their version of it, like with a teenager who's really well endowed.
Is that true?
Yeah, pretty soon, like every network will have their own version of Hung.
Jesus. The MTV shows, they've been trying to do more nonfiction stuff. Any of it working?
So far, not yet, because, I mean, people like the stuff like Jersey Shore, which unfortunately is still in my backyard, or you know, I guess they're going to Miami this year.
Yes.
But I think sooner or later they'll break through with something. The problem is they got a whole generation now that basically only watches reality TV, so it becomes harder and harder to get them hooked on stuff that's fictional.
Klosterman wrote a thing once about how Friday Night Lights felt like a CBS show to him, even though it was on NBC. And the whole point of the piece was about how certain shows feel like they should be on certain networks, and it feels weird if they're not. To me, MTV just doesn't, I just can't accept nonfiction scripted shows from them.
Yeah.
It's just nonfiction scripted. That's a misnomer. I should just say scripted shows. It just feels wrong on MTV. I don't like it. Then the commercials come in and it's like, coming up next on some weird club show. And then it comes back to the, it just doesn't feel right. And I don't think they should do it.
I can see that.
Put it on Comedy Central or Spike. Like, you know, Spike is, now what do you think of this? Spike's made a couple efforts here.
I haven't had a chance to watch them, I'll be honest. It's just, it's been a busy year.
Really? Down on the Spike shows?
I'm not down on it. It's just sort of, you know, we used to have like four critics at the paper. Now there's just me, so I got to do triage on what I can and can't make time for.
The Comedy Central show, Sarah's show got moved to midnight. Not a good sign. Are you watching that show or no?
Some of the time, I just... The songs that she does always get stuck in my head, so and then I sing them and I'm around my 6-year-old daughter, and that becomes a problem.
What do you see with? Yeah, I guess that would be a problem. I probably shouldn't watch South Park with my daughter, right? That makes me a bad parent.
I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah, damn. Well, I'm a bad parent because she likes the show and I don't care. You know what? The way the world works now, she's going to be able to Google horrible things when she's 7. So. At least she can develop a sense of humor. So I had one more. How I Met Your Mother. You went on that show?
I don't think this has been one of their best years, but I usually really like it.
Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory, I think it's probably funnier than How I Met Your Mother, but is not a better show, if that makes sense. Like, sometimes a comedy can be really good and not be as funny as another comedy.
Mm. What's weird to me is that there's not a monster comedy anymore. You know, you think like even back to the mid-90s. Like I was thinking, who was I thinking about this? Some athlete reminded me of Fun Bobby.
Remember in France?
So in season one they had this character Fun Bobby who was like the most fun guy on the planet, and it turned out he had a drinking problem and he stopped drinking, and he just became really super depressing Bobby. And there was an athlete this weekend that I was thinking of making a Fun Bobby joke about when I was doing my March Madness diary. And then I figured nobody would get it. And then I thought, well, everybody in my age range will get that joke because everybody watched the first two seasons of Friends before it fell off a cliff. And then that made me think, there's not really a show like that now.
No, No, it's comedy is pretty much a niche thing at this point. I mean, the most watched one is Two and a Half Men, and even that's, you know, I don't know anyone who regularly watches it at this point.
So do you think we will ever see a show become kind of a cultural phenomenon like Friends did, I would say, going late first season and then early second season?
I don't know, because there's now so many options for people. It used to be a case like, you know, you watched a show because there was nothing else on, and then you grew to like it and laugh at it and whatever. And now people can sort of fine-tune their sense of humor and find something that hits them exactly right as opposed to, you know, 80% of the time. And there's a lot of people who just, they watch reality TV for their comedy at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
For unintentional comedy.
Yep. Yeah. You certainly do.
The niche thing is a real problem, especially with the way cable's been able to push the envelope, because now the stuff Curb Your Enthusiasm can get away with just so far surpassed, you know, really for the whole decade, was such a creative advantage versus a network show that it was almost unfair. Like, I almost felt like Emmy should have gone and had cable comedy and cable drama categories, and then network, because the degree of difficulty is so much higher on network. But yeah, I don't see it. I look at Friends. The first season, I remember I was dating a girl, and we were at her house watching a Friends episode, and her parents were there, and it was like it appealed to all of us for different reasons. And now I just don't see that happening anymore.
It's kind of depressing. Only shows that you get everybody watching is like Idol, which isn't funny. Also,
no. Now you're an Idol guy.
I can't resist American Idol. I don't know why, but I just keep watching it.
Well, I'll give you some reasons.
Okay.
I think it's captured kind of the way America thinks better than any other show. It's got that lottery ticket element to it.
Yeah.
That anybody has a chance to basically hit it big, which we all can identify with, especially like middle and lower classes, you know. I just think it taps into that. Anybody has a chance. Anybody can make it. Anyone can be a star. So that's why, you know, it's been so successful the last 10 years. But I think the other reason is Simon. And I got to say, we were talking about this this week, and I was at dinner with some people, and we were talking about whether that show makes it without Simon. And I really don't think it will.
I'm with you.
I think the ratings will drop in half. And I think he has turned into this guy that every time he says he gives his opinion, you're kind of – I don't care about the other three guys. We fast forward over Ellen and Karen Brady. We just go right to Simon. We TiVo it, and then we go to Simon's take on each one. I don't care what the other three people say. And once he's out –
I think they're making a mistake trying to do the show without him and doing a show with him at the same time. That's going to ruin both in the long run.
What do you mean? His new show, you're saying –
Yeah, like I think, because what happened in England is he left Pop Idol, which was the English version of American Idol, to do X Factor. And so the TV network said, you know what, Simon's the franchise, we're canceling Pop Idol, we're only going to do X Factor. I think that's what Fox should have done here, because doing two similar shows, one with Simon, one without, is not going to do anybody any good.
I think that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
I think, I bet they'll both be on for a year, and eventually Simon's going to win. He's, you know, he's really probably the most candid celebrity that we have, and it works for him. And sometimes it's brutal, and he's so mean, but he has to be that way, because then it gives real value to when he says something of praise, and you feel like, wow, Simon liked it.
Yeah.
We're all like his little kids sitting around his leather chairs. He gives his opinions, you know.
And the thing is, they can't bring in somebody new to do what Simon does on Idol, because he only gets away with it because he was there from the beginning. It's like he's grandfathered in.
Yeah.
People used to hate him when the show started, and it took about a year or so for people to realize, you know what, he's right. And
yeah.
Now he's bigger than the show, and you can't find someone else to be a jerk. I mean, they'll just be hated. You know, people hate Kara, and Kara doesn't really say anything mean.
And his takes are really, really smart, I think. I agree with him almost all the time, which kind of frightens me because I love disagreeing with people. And I can't imagine them bringing anybody else in for that hammer spot that would that could be that frank, that could win my trust with their opinions on music. I just don't think that person exists.
Yeah, you know, and Ellen is certainly not that person.
She's been horrible. I mean, it was a terrible idea. She's afraid to say anything critical, and she knows nothing about music. So why is she there? She's not really funny, and anytime she has anything to say, it's a, I didn't love the song choice, but I think you're great. And it's like, shut up. Why are we even listening to you? I also think they made a huge mistake going to four judges. I think it slows the show down.
It eats up too much time. The show runs too long. They have fewer performances per episode when they do an hour-long episode. There's no reason for it.
And they also, you know, they end up repeating what the other person said, and that there's a lot of, I agree with what Kara said. It's like, well, you're wasting my time, basically. I got to say, the other person who gets a bum rap is Seacrest.
That's a very hard job to do well, and he does it pretty well.
Almost impossible job. I feel the same way about Jeff Probst. I think those are really hard jobs that we just assume are easy jobs, and they're not. And Seacrest, I don't know, he hits the right balance. It's weird. It feels weird to even praise him. Why are you praising him? But his guy's talented.
It's so easy to use him as a punching bag, but no, he's good. I used to like Probst more than I do. I think he plays favorites too much these days, and it becomes really obvious not only in what he says at Tribal Council, but also in, like, editing choices and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, like, a guy like Russell just comes across to me like sort of a bozo, but you can tell Probst loves him, and so the show is going to sell him as some great player.
Right. Yeah, the other thing with Seacrest is he's really good on those stupid red carpet shows that my wife watches.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody else runs those shows, they can't remember who half the people are, and they get the girlfriend's names wrong, and, you know, it's just it's an error every minute, and Seacrest just bangs it out. He's like, oh, hey, here's Selma Hayek. Selma, how's your two-year-old baby so-and-so doing? Like, he just remembers everything. I think he gets a bad rep.
Did you see the Oscar pre-show that ABC did after his this year with Kathy Ireland?
It was a train wreck.
Oh, yeah. Brutal. It's like it really makes you appreciate how easy Seacrest makes it look.
Survivor, you brought up.
Yeah.
Or I brought up. One of us brought it up. Now, I've mentioned it in columns or whatever, and I've gotten a couple emails from college kids who I try to stay in tune with, even though I'm 60 years old at this point. And they were like, dude.
Right behind you.
Dude, college kids don't watch Survivor anymore. I don't know what world you're living in. I was like, no, that can't be true. And then I looked up the ratings, and is this a show that is now skewing toward people in our age group, and that's it?
Absolutely. It's, you know, any show that's on this long, the only people who are sticking with it, you know, are older, or they were young at the time but have aged with the show. New people are not coming. They're on to something different.
So what is that something different?
Jersey Shore, I hate to say.
Dumber television?
I'm an old man like you, so I don't have my finger on the pulse as much as I should.
I hope if it's the Railroad Road Roast Challenge, I'm fine with that. Please gravitate toward that. So that's the most important show, and really, as I've said many times, should be our fifth major sport. I'm really enjoying the Survivor All-Star seasons, though. I like when all of them have played it before, and I think it pushes it to another level from a strategy standpoint. It really gets interesting to me, and it's almost hard to top. I don't know how you...
It's weird because I like the idea of the previous All-Star season, but they got kind of awkward, especially the first one, because it was like you could tell everyone was taking it too personally.
Yeah.
That they knew each other off screen. But this has been a pretty good balance so far of, like, people who know what they're doing and are playing the game hard. You know, when they blindsided Suri a few weeks ago, that was very cool. And anytime I can watch Boston Rob, I will enjoy that.
What about Celebrity Apprentice?
That I don't watch. I lost patience for Trump, like, I think 2 seasons into the original show.
Yeah, for me it was about 4 seasons ago.
Yeah.
I'm long out on him. I was surprised by some of the people they got this time around. I was flipping channels and, like, Daryl Strawberry was in a limo, and I was like, what? Daryl Strawberry?
What am I gonna do?
I know, but it was just weird to see him. He's in a limo with, like, Rod Blagojevich, whatever that guy's name is.
Blagojevich.
I mean, and all these other people, and I'm like, oh, my God. Scraping the bottom of the barrel. How about Dancing with the Stars? You're out on that?
I got to draw a line, and I just don't care about dancing enough to watch. And my wife, that's fortunately one that my wife doesn't make me watch, and she doesn't watch it either, so I have no excuse.
Yeah, I don't know whether I brainwashed my wife or what I did to live in a fantastic world where I don't have to watch that show or at least hear it on in the background.
Yeah.
I lost The Bachelor. I lost that battle, I won this one because this is a show that my wife would like, and I have no idea why she doesn't watch it, but I would never ask her hey, you know what show you should watch? Dancing with the Stars.
Don't press your luck on that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, because Erin was on this year, and and I just, she's a really, really, really nice person. I just want her to do well, and I'm happy she's moving on with her life and all that stuff after what happened. So I wanted to watch last night and support. And my wife, I could see her wheels turning, my wife, and she's like, why don't we watch the show? I love this show. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
And she's like getting mad because Ocho Cinco didn't get a high enough score. And and she's saying what's her name? Kate Gosselin. She's like,
yeah,
you know, I didn't think I'd like Kate Gosselin, but I kind of like her. And I'm thinking I've opened up a can of worms. It's terrible.
Should have just waited for the YouTube the next day.
It's a really stupid show. It's probably the most indefensible of all the hit reality shows, in my opinion. I just don't get it. I don't understand why this many people like it.
Well, for the most part, it skews a little older. There's people who like dancing. Also, it certainly doesn't help that there's attractive women in really skimpy outfits, you know, shaking it on screen.
Well, Pam Anderson's in it, and is this a bet I can make about whether she ends up sleeping with her partner? Or is that off the board in Vegas?
There's enough history of it in previous seasons, from what I understand, that I'm sure some bookie will take that action.
We used to make fun of Carolla when he was on, because even though he was with some Mormon who, you know, obviously Carolla's married, but we always thought he had like a little elementary school puppy crush on her. And I think it's impossible not to if you're spending 12 hours a day dancing with some random attractive person.
Wait, it's all like Carolla, Jeff Ross, now Erin Andrews. Will eventually Klosterman be on Dancing with the Stars as well? Or are all your guests going to cycle through there?
It could happen. My, fortunately for me, I'm an awful dancer. Not that it asked me anyway, but I was talking about, because Erin was on, I was like, they're running out of ESPN personalities. I might be next. And my wife was like, you'd be terrible. You'd be the worst dancer they've ever had. It kind of hurt my feelings, I got to be honest. Now I kind of want to go on.
I think Tom DeLay was worse than you would ever be.
Did he have a fake leg or anything?
I don't know if he had a fake leg, but I think it was him. There's some politician, like his first episode, he just sat in the chair for the whole dance, and it basically looked like the other dancer was giving him a lap dance.
That sounds fantastic.
That's why some people watch the show.
We only have like 10 minutes left, so let's hit Lost.
Okay, go.
Defend season 6 to me.
Why does it need defending? You like it.
Do I like it because I just spent the last 5 years watching it and I want to like it and I just want to make sure I didn't waste the last five? How many episodes was it? How many episodes of Lost have there been? Like 150?
There have been at least 100.
All right, let's say 130 episodes, 130 hours spread over 6 years. Do I want to like season 6 just because I don't want that 130 hours to just be a colossal waste of time that I regret?
It could be, but here's the thing. And I've had my problems with this season. When they did the Jack episode and the Kate episode, I was sort of, you know, on the verge of throwing stuff at the screen. But, you know, then they've done some really other good ones. The one with Saeed, the one with Ben, the one with Sawyer last week. I don't know that any of us is going to be satisfied by what the end actually winds up being, but as long as each episode by itself can be entertaining, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, they're all entertaining. I mean, I never finish a Lost episode and go, I wasted that hour, I wish I hadn't watched it. But then I start getting mad the more I think about it. And like, for instance, I like the Sawyer episode too. And I was thinking about it after, and I'm like, all right, what's the degree of difficulty for writing that episode? You're like, let's give Sawyer an alternate reality. We'll make him a cop. We'll have the Asian guy as his partner. Yeah. And instead of a sting, it'll be a setup. And I don't know. It's just feels like these guys are in a room just coming up, well, what are we doing for the Sawyer one? And they just throwing stuff against the wall. And because they had this alternate reality, really, you could do anything. Like, I could have an alternate reality with you right now, and you could be dressed like a woman. Well, does that have to mean anything?
How do you know I'm not dressed like a woman?
It's a great point. I don't know, though. It's just, it bugs me. And this is the same reason I've absolutely hated dream sequences, especially with The Sopranos, which are the all-time hatred I've ever had for dream sequences in that show. Because they don't mean anything ultimately. And you could, you could read into this, and the lantern actually means that's a window into Tony's soul. And it's like, come on. This is why I didn't want to take English in college.
Yeah. Well, here's the mistake I think they made. They decided that they were going to keep whatever these flash sideways are a secret. And we'll find out later on. And in theory, when we find out, they will mean a lot more. Because I don't think it's just a parallel reality. It's going to be something that ties back into the show. You know, one of the theories I've tossed around is basically, like, we're seeing how the show ends in advance. Like, this is where all the characters are going to wind up after, you know, this war between Jacob and the Smoke Monster ends or something.
I agree. I think that's and the tip-off is that Jack has those marks on his body.
Yeah, exactly.
If that wasn't there, I wouldn't think
it. But it is. It's like you say, it's like a dream sequence right now. When we get to watch them on DVD a year from now, it'll be different. But a lot of them do kind of drag.
And that was, you know, I think the greatest lost moment ever, in my opinion, when they flash forwarded for the first time with Jack and the beard and Kate, and we got to go back. And it was mind blowing because you knew that for sure happened. And I think I'd be more invested if I knew that all of this stuff was definitely heading somewhere. I'm not sure why they didn't. Maybe that's why they tipped it off with the marks on Jack's body, to be like, hold tight. This is all actually going to mean something.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's been enough hints to suggest that this is real in some way. But the thing about the flash forward is you found out at the end of that episode. Because up until that point, we're sort of watching Jack wander around, and he's got a beard, and he's drunk, and he's listening to Nirvana, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
When in Jack's life did this take place? You know, what flashback does it fit in between? But then at the end of the episode, you find out it's a flash forward, and it's your mind's blown, and you get that sort of instant gratification. And I'm not saying everything Lost does has to pay off immediately, but I think this particular device is not working well without them having told us what it is.
That was one of my proudest viewing moments. I called that flash forward like the second segment. I was like, this is the future. We're looking at the future right now. My wife thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
I rarely can have the aha moment way ahead of time. I'm always the guy who is completely flabbergasted that something happened.
It's nice when you can have those moments, though.
Yeah, it's good.
It makes it feel like worth it that you've invested all this time in some silly show.
It's good. You can put it on the resume. My bigger issue with the flash forward, flash sideways, whatever the hell is going on, is that I just don't think they've been that good. Like, I think if you look at the first three seasons of Lost, the flashback episodes were really good. You know, or the sequences, segments, whatever, and how they tied together. I just thought they were excellent. And I don't really feel that way this time with these flash sideways. They're almost like intentionally not that interesting. And maybe that's the point, is that in real life, their lives really aren't that interesting. I don't know.
Well, I think some of them have been good. I thought the Ben flash sideways was very good. And I also think, like, if you were to go back and look at some of those flashbacks from the first few years, it's really only the first half season to a whole season of the flashbacks that really held up. And then after that, it was sort of, they were just sort of killing time, and, you know, we're finding out how Jack got his tattoos and things like that.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Yeah, but you're right. Some of these flash sideways have been really dull. The one with Kate and Claire, the one with Jack and the son that he suddenly has. Even the Sawyer one, I think I like mainly just because I like Sawyer, not necessarily because anything interesting happened in it.
I liked it more because I was rooting for a spinoff show with him in what's the Asian guy's name in the show?
Miles. Yeah, I would absolutely watch Sawyer and Miles as cops. I would also watch Ben as a European history teacher who's just insulting everybody.
with Locke as the substitute?
Yeah, Locke and Arst on a show together. I would watch that.
Maybe that's where this goes. You just have eight spinoff shows. Hurley's rich. He's a rich benefactor. But out of all those ones, Sawyer and Miles is a show that if you told me tomorrow, like, that show's starting on October 2nd. I'm setting the DVR for that one. Making a 30-minute, like, black comedy or something.
Yep.
It's a great show.
And also a way that they could get around the whole, hey, it's Sawyer problem, because he's still playing Sawyer.
Now, unfortunately, this can't happen because the colossal failure of Joey Tribbiani's show, whatever that one, Joey.
Yeah.
That's ruined all future spinoffs, I think, for 50 years until we get the stench of that show off our bodies.
We still get spinoffs now and then. You'll still get them on occasion. You know, NCIS LA is doing pretty well.
But I'm saying ending a great show, but then taking one character and spinning it off. I think Joey ruined that.
Yeah, we'll see. I think there's two. Frasier was so successful that other people will keep trying it.
I don't think you watched Joey closely enough.
I did watch Joey. I watched it a lot because Adriana from The Sopranos was on it. So
I remain disappointed.
Paper I had to write about it.
I remain disappointed in Joey. because I feel like that show should. Joey really kind of came on toward the tail end of Friends.
Yeah.
And I don't think he wanted it. I don't think Matt LeBlanc. Yeah, it's kind of doughy. Like he kind of mailed it in, and something was wrong there. It's a show that I think should have worked. Like it's for the same reason that Parks and Recreation, they figured that out.
Yeah.
Like you have an idea with a lot of money behind it, and you have smart people involved. The show should work. It shouldn't just be a colossal failure.
Yeah.
So where do you see Lost ending? Give me your structure of the final episode.
I'm throwing out a prediction just because I feel like I have to believe something about the Flash sideways, but I think there's going to be a war between Jacob's people and the Smoke Monster's people. Sawyer is probably going to sacrifice himself to save everybody, and the people who sided with Jacob get relatively happy endings in the Flash sideways, and the people who didn't get bad endings. And that's the stuff we've been seeing so far.
Hmm. Well, we'll see. When's the final show?
May 23rd, I think.
I hope it's not against an NBA playoff game that I'm going to care about. It probably will be. Well, it probably will be. Well, TiVo lost. I like TiVoing it anyway because, and I think they started this in season 2 or possibly season 3, but they started cramming it, going with quicker segments and more commercials.
Yeah.
So instead of like having the 3-minute commercial break or 3.5, it's 2 minutes, but there's more stops and starts, which I don't like. So it's a more fun. We usually started at 9:15, and then just fast forward, and you're done at 10 anyway, but you missed all the commercials.
Yeah, that's what I do too. But you got to be careful though, because that thing is going to get spoiled very quickly that night. Stay off of Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter has become something that you never want to go to under any circumstances. If there's anything that might get spoiled.
Yeah, scores, movie endings.
Yeah, all that stuff. All right, Alan Sepinwall. Anything you're writing about this week?
It's a bit of a slow week. I'm sort of working ahead on some stuff because I'm going to be taking some time off. But I got to say, since the last time I did the show, I started up my own podcast because sort of inspired by you, which has been going pretty well.
Really?
Yeah.
And how do we find this?
You go to iTunes. It's called Firewall and Iceberg because it's me and a guy named Dan Feinberg I knew in college, and we just sort of argue about TV and. We needed a dopey name that sounded like an 80s, you know, buddy cop show or something.
And I like it.
Settle on. So, yeah, go to iTunes, search for either Sepinwall or Firewall or Iceberg, and you'll find it. And it's every Wednesday, and it's two guys arguing about what's happening on TV that week.
That sounds like a show that would have been a George Clooney pilot, one of his 9 that didn't make it.
Yeah, like around 1989, I think.
Yeah.
That could have worked.
And the other guy was Bronson Pinchot. And it just didn't work. The network didn't pick it up.
And now me and my friend can argue over which of us is Clooney and which of us is Pinchot.
Good luck with that. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill.
Target the channel. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
To thank you for making Subway footlongs famous. Now enjoy any regular footlong as a $5 footlong. That's right, any, including your favorites like the savory chicken bacon and ranch. Any Subway regular footlong is just $5. Hurry in.